And in the studio, I've got Phil McCabe. Morning, Phil.
Morning, Aaron.
How are you doing this morning?
Very well, thank you.
Beautiful like your morning. Shirt. Stop you. Deep Sea Mining.
Yeah.
It's a Greenpeace shirt, is it?
It is.
So people can get one from there?
You can. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, if you okay. So we've brought Phil in for a number of things we want to talk about. Seabed mining, of course, the movie Deep Rising, Maui Dolphin Day, and what's happening with the TTR reapplication to mine the seabed. Let's start with that. We've just been talking about how the government's been throwing a few issues under the bus, dear to our hearts in this community. So as well as TTR being sent by the Supreme Court, sent back to the start of the process with the Environmental Protection Agency, there's also issues with the government, what their plans are. But let's just stop with the TTR issue. Have they got any new evidence that they're bringing to the application?
To the hearing? Well, it's a reconsideration by the EPA after the Supreme Court ruling some time ago that basically said, no, the decision to approve TTR's application by the EPA in 2017 was unlawful.
Right.
So they've sent it back for reconsideration on a number of issues. The hearing itself, the first, it's split into three sections. There's 3 days in March, week after next. There's 3 days in April and 3 days in May around it. And those are going to be held in Hawera in South Taranaki, really close to the mining site, the proposed mining site, which is good, rather than having people travel to Wellington. The company, Trans-Tasman Resources, has not put forward much in the way of new evidence.
Which doesn't surprise me, because all along there has not been a lot of evidence to prove what they want to prove.
No, that's right. They don't know enough. They haven't done the work. The decision to give them consent some years ago was based on, you can do the work after you get consent and tell us all the information after we give you permission.
Really?
Which is,
I forgot
which
that.
Which is ridiculous. You know, they were given 2 years to do a bunch of work, which needed to be done.
Did they do that anyway?
They didn't. They haven't done it. And so we kind of view it as TTR's really just dragging the process out and keeping us all involved and trying to keep their project alive to some degree. They're not putting a lot into the hearing process. CASM and Greenpeace have put forward a load of updated evidence from a bunch of experts, marine mammals experts, bird experts, etc.
So last time lots of residents of Raglan went and spoke.
Yes.
Is that happening again, or is the it's energy less, gone from that, or is it even necessary?
It's the opportunity, if you haven't already sort of notified the decision-making board, the decision-making committee, that you want to speak. If you haven't done that, it's too late, but that's okay. I think some have done it, and the major sort of groups that have sort of followed this through the court processes over the last, 4 years, 5 years, more maybe.
Seven.
Yeah, something. Time flies.
God, it's just been going forever.
Those groups, you know, the local Māori, Ngāti Rua Nui Ngāroru, the fishing groups,
yep.
CASM, Greenpeace, Forest and Bird, etc., are all deeply engaged in it and ensuring that the job gets done, working to ensure the job gets done as far as getting it declined. At this stage, I think there's little chance that TTR will get consent. We all know that the proposed activity of strip mining a massive area of the ocean and pouring all your waste back into the environment to deal with is inappropriate, and the law basically, you know, backs that up.
So. Yeah. So that's under current legislation.
Yes.
What do we know
legislation,
about
legislation that was put in place by the national government in 2013.
But they already we were talking off there about how this government seems determined to break things and negate things, and they've already gone back on some of the stuff the previous national government did. What are you hearing? What do we know at this point in time?
Yeah, what we know is that in the coalition agreement between National and New Zealand First, there's reference to advancing vanadium and vanadium mining, I guess, which is one of the components of the iron sands that we have off the west coast here.
Okay.
And what that means exactly, we don't know. But we do know that the National government is putting forward a proposed bill to fast-track major projects of national and regional interest. So that the providing more information on that and what that will mean, I think, on the 7th of March is the date they've put.
Okay, so quite soon.
So in a week or so, we'll understand what they're including. They may even list the types of projects that might qualify for fast-tracking, and that may or may not include seabed mining. We think that it would be crazy for them to say the Trans-Tasman Resources Project can fall into the mix with fast tracking because it's currently in the middle of a court proceeding that's been going on for years. So if they did that, they would be basically overriding the courts.
Will that bother them? Why not bother Shane Jones?
I don't think it'll bother Shane Jones, but maybe there are some more sensible folks amongst other parties. Or maybe not. We don't know.
Somebody in there.
So it's really concerning. Basically, the only way that this activity could get consented, because it's an inherently destructive proposed activity, is to change the law and lower the environmental bar, lower the social, the need for social acceptance, and do it via fast tracking. The framework that I think I understand is that it goes to a small committee of, an application goes to a small committee of experts that then provide a recommendation to the minister, and the minister can approve or disapprove. There's no opportunity, as far as we understand at this stage, although we don't have the details, there's no opportunity for communities or interested folks to engage in the process like there is currently under the EPA.
Can the government be taken to court over legislation?
I'm not a lawyer.
Okay, me neither.
But I mean, we can take them to the court of public opinion and push back, and I can foresee that sort of thing. A lot of pressure coming from communities and groups.
There are a lot of issues on that table at the moment.
There are. Those that want it, that might be inclined to push are going to be spread thin. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's where that's at. Now you're back on the. I didn't even introduce you properly. You are the Pacific lead for the Deep Sea Conservation Coalition, and you also told me you're back on the Kiwis Against Seabed Mining Committee.
Have been for a few years now.
Have you?
Yeah, I took a few years off.
So you were the chairperson long. That was when I first started interviewing you about this. Yeah. You were the chair.
Yeah.
That's probably like a decade ago,
Something like that. Yeah. 2012 to 17, I was. Yeah.
Yeah. So 2012 is when I started doing this show. So
right.
Yeah, we would have been right into it there. We've covered really what Chasm's dealing with.
Yeah, that's what's on. Right in the middle. I was reading expert evidence last night. So it's in the middle of the process.
The deep sea conservation issue. You've been travelling around the world in this role and watching governments come on board. The call for a moratorium on deep sea mining. How is that progressing at the moment? It seemed to be going well last time I talked to you.
Yeah, it's progressing well. There's a plan that the world kind of agreed to the possibility of some decades ago, 30, 40 years ago, that countries and companies will be able to mine areas of international waters. So international waters covers about half the planet, outside countries' territories, and it's governed the seabed. And any activities on the seabed is governed by the International Seabed Authority, which is based in Kingston, Jamaica. We're engaged in quite a significant global campaign to get countries to institute a moratorium or a pause on allowing deep sea mining to start, which if they don't put a moratorium in, we could see it starting in the next year or two.
Has it not already started in some places?
No. There's exploration licenses. There's like in a massive area between Hawaii and Mexico. There's an exploration license area that's actually as wide as the United States. So take from California to New York, if you can imagine a mine site 4,500 kilometers wide.
Do they know what's there? Do they have some idea of
what's there? Yeah, there's rocks sort of look like lumps of coal laying on the ocean surface, sitting in a thick mud, and it's those rocks contain nickel, cobalt, manganese, copper, so pretty valuable metals. So yeah, it's incredibly destructive. You're basically causing permanent loss of habitat.
I was going to ask this because you described it as rocks sitting in mud,
they're habitat. The unique habitat that provides space for a massive diversity of organisms that exist there and provide, you know, perform an important function as part of the ocean. And, you know, they basically literally strip mine these areas. And the rocks themselves provide the habitat. You know, they create niches for organisms and organisms live on them. So not a good thing. And then, of course, the waste material, you know, they suck it up 4,000 metres to a ship. They separate out what they want, and then they pump the waste into the environment again for the environment to deal with.
Do they send it back down a pipe and carefully lay it out the way it was?
No, they don't. They drop it at about 1,200 metres is what they're proposing, so in the mid-water column, and you know that would drift for thousands of kilometres in various directions, but possibly you know, impacting tuna fisheries and so on.
So yeah, it's the out of sight, out of mind approach. As there's life all the way down, like you're talking 4 kilometres of water there.
Absolutely.
See, we just don't know. We feel like this is just, it's deep down there. It's dark. We've got no clues.
Totally. And I guess this is a good segue into the film that we're screening tomorrow evening at the Old School. I think it's at 7 o'clock. Called Deep Rising.
Yep.
And that's narrated by Jason Momoa, and it a lot of the content in that film is footage and narration on the organisms that exist down in the deep ocean.
Right.
So just extraordinary footage of just out of this world.
Typically, animals. There's some very unusual life forms in places.
Totally. And I think something like 90% of the organisms that are, you know, big enough, I guess, or you know, what do they call them? Macrofauna, I guess. Produce their own light, so they're bioluminescent, and so they communicate and exist through light. Just extraordinary organisms, and slow growing, very sensitive to disturbance, and you know
Disturbance wouldn't happen at that depth, really.
Basically, no. Disturbance. I mean, there's you know, rubbish can accumulate there, I guess. Whales drop. You know, so the disturbance is generally a natural disturbance where things drop, and then organisms will, you know, descend on that whale carcass and eat it, and then you know, things happen like that. But nothing of what's being proposed.
Yeah, I was talking with Peggy. I haven't seen, you've seen the film, so you know that the footage is pretty good.
Yeah, it's great, and it outlines the what's being proposed. As far as what we're fighting against. So it's got a company character that's pushing things ahead, and it's got an environmentalist that's challenging it and sort of speaking to the science and the environmental concerns, and it outlines the International Seabed Authority and what goes on there, and it leaves it up to the viewer to make their own decision. It doesn't fall one way or the other, but it describes the issue really well.
How many eyeballs have got on this film around the world? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't know the viewership, but it's a great film. It's really well done. It's the director's an award winning director, and you know, Jason Momoa's
he's
narrating
he's thrown his star power behind it. So that's pretty significant. And you're going to be doing a Q&A at the end of the film as well.
Yeah, just because the film's, it goes to a point, but there's a lot's occurred since they made the film, politically and as far as the campaign to stop it. So
right, okay, so you're, as we know, you're right at the forefront of that. Yeah. So, but people can ask, or they can ask you anything, I guess.
They can ask me anything, whether I'll answer is...
whether you've got the answer, because you're, I mean, how did you get into this in the first place? Your background that got you here?
Just literally someone who enjoys the ocean and, you know, has a long-standing connection with the ocean, and saw that seabed mining was just an outrageous proposal. And there was an opening to engage, and I engaged, and through Chasm, through all of that, and sort of, you know, supporting community engagement in the process to stop, you know, the seabed mining, which was proposed for the whole West Coast here. And 5 years of that sort of set me up to, I got invited to join this group and do work in the Pacific, and that's been...
So awesome. It's kind of your job now, is it?
It is, yeah. I'm sort of contracted for 2 or 3 days a week and, engaging now significantly with governments, Pacific governments generally. I'm off to Namibia next month for a 3-day, 4-day workshop on the deep sea and what the status is as far as knowledge and governance of the deep sea. That's something that's put on by the French government.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they've stopped trying to blow up atolls and they're worried actually about the deep sea.
France
now
is leading the charge. France has called for a total ban on deep sea mining. And you know, France has the biggest sort of ocean area with its Pacific regions, French Polynesia and New Caledonia and Wallis and Futuna. So those combined with the French EEZ, it's the biggest ocean area. So France is leading the charge. New Zealand's got a position of supporting a moratorium at the moment. We really hope that Winston Peters, as Foreign Affairs Minister, doesn't flip that. There's no reason that he should. There's no gain for New Zealand to support mining in international waters. Nobody's got any interest from New Zealand in it.
And I'm imagining backroom conversations and things.
I have no idea why he would flip it, but you never know.
There's several things, many things that Winston Peters does. We don't know why he does.
Yeah, surprising character.
Yeah, because sometimes he's fun, but not lately. Lately he's been more worrying than normal.
Yeah, he was visiting the Cook Islands a few weeks ago and sat with the Prime Minister of the Cook Islands, who's really pro deep sea mining, and they're trying to advance deep sea mining.
That's right,
in their territory. And Winston came out and said, well, I don't know what all these people that are saying no are saying. They don't even know what they're saying. And the water's too heavy down there for any organisms to exist.
So that's
it's not very technical language, and not very informed.
The water's anyway. Heavy water.
Yeah, heavy water.
We know that it's high pressure, isn't it?
Like it is. Yeah, yeah. We wouldn't exist down there, but organisms have evolved over millions of years to exist there, and they do.
That's what I was going to say before. The astonishing thing about how life seems to just find every little corner of the planet to live, because there's those deep sea vents as well, which are volcanic, so they're really hot, and somehow or other, life that can handle intense pressure and intense heat is thriving around there. How on earth it got there through the deep, dark, cold ocean, nobody knows.
Well, they're saying it's giving us clues on how life began, and we're learning more and more about the deep sea and what exists there. We know very little. They're saying 95% of the species are unnamed, undiscovered. Mm. The area where they want to mine in between Hawaii and Mexico, it's one of there was a study done by the University of Hawaii that sampled 300 areas around the world's oceans in that sort of depths, and that particular area called the Clarion-Clipperton Zone came up the most biodiverse of those 300 areas.
Is that right?
So these nodules, these rocks that they're wanting to strip mine, provides an extraordinary amount of ability for organisms to exist in this and fully biodiverse. I remember speaking to a Spanish scientist in Kingston, Jamaica a couple of years ago, and she said, we go down, we take a sample here, and then we take a sample not many kilometres away, but say 100 metres away, and it's full of completely different organisms. So it's not a common... The species that exist are not common across the area. It's just completely,
There's a narrative, and when you mentioned the leader of the Cook Islands, and we heard it from years ago from whoever was leading TTR at the time, about there's nothing out there, it's a desert. The head of TTR used the word desert, and it's maybe they believe that. It sounds like Cook Islands Prime Minister believes it.
He believes it because it advances what he wants to advance. It's not. He knows otherwise. He's been told. He's been shown. The science shows it. I mean, they're doing specific research in Cook Islands territories, but it would be really weird if a similar habitat, which is in their area with those nodules and the area between Hawaii and Mexico, if they were really different. I mean, they'd be different, but
they've got biodiversity, but they've both got life as well.
That's right. Yeah. They've got different life, but they've got life. So,
So the other question is, does it matter? It's way down there. We're up here on the land. What's it got to do with us? People,
you know, a lot of us here in identifying it or understand the connectivity of the environment and the natural world. And, you know, you break one part, it's going to impact the rest. And we know, we're learning more. We don't know the full range of functions of the deep ocean, but we know it's the largest carbon sink. We know it performs a carbon sequestration process, but we don't fully understand it. And it's got an extraordinary power to do that, which we don't fully understand. And so you're basically disabling a massive area from performing its function by removing these nodules and removing the ability for life to exist there. So just plain stupid, given the planetary crisis.
Yeah, and this is the theme all along, is that we're still learning. We don't know enough.
Yeah, and we know that doing what they're proposing will cause extinctions, but we don't know what organisms will be extinct because we haven't discovered them yet.
Yeah, you know, yeah, okay.
Just plain stupid.
And so if people can't catch up with you at the Deep Rising movie, which is 7 o'clock at the Old School Thursday night, and the Q&A afterwards, you and Kiwis Against Seabed Mining have got a tent at Maui Dolphin Day this Saturday.
Yeah, yep. So please stop in and chat,
yep.
Ask questions, engage. Chasm's been, you know, it's been quiet the last few years with just legal processes through the courts, but there's been a small group of crew that have kept it alive, and, you know, Chasm came from this community through our response to proposed seabed mining off our coast, and it's done an extraordinary job over the years, you know, representing communities and coastal peoples on this issue. So, you know, on behalf of Chasm, we thank the community for all the support, and we're standing there on behalf.
Who else is on the Chasm committee at the moment that might be down there on Saturday? Because we hear from you all the time on the radio, but we know there's others.
June Penn will be there, yes. I believe. Paulina Sadowski, Katie Lowe's, Malibu Hamilton, who's...
Is he coming over?
No, he's left. He's left Whangaroa back over to Thames to be with family.
Yeah.
But he left the committee earlier last year after being there from the get-go.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was coming
back. Huge contribution. I actually stopped and saw Malibu the other day. He's doing well.
Oh, that's good.
He misses home.
Mm. Yeah. Has he gone to look after his
parents? No, he's just been close to his daughter and his mokopuna.
I understand. Yeah, we all want that. Okay, so that's Maui's Dolphin Day. Starts at midday, folks. I hope you've got your rafts ready. We got a state radio station's got a raft in this year.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So, and I hear that area school's got about 3 rafts.
It's always fun. It's a crazy half an hour or so of each year.
Yeah.
It's great that it's come back. It's been some years since we've had a Maui Dolphin Day, and it's a great community event. So props to the crew who've pushed it forward and getting it back on the calendar.
2021 was the last time we had one. Even then, I think we missed it on 2020 as well. So it's the in my opinion, it's become the biggest community event that we have, and not because anyone tried to make it that way. It was just the stuff that the community responded to.
I mean, it speaks to that little dolphin that exists only off our coast, and I think we all feel a sense of responsibility to care for it, and it. We're coastal people, we're ocean lovers, and it's a good time to come together.
Yeah. All right, Phil, thanks for coming in.
Cheers, Aaron.
Okay, folks, what are we going to do now? I'm going to play a little ad break, and I might have some music lined up for you after this.